Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in. It is Monday, April 15th, IRS Tax Day. How did you do? How many of you waited until the last minute like I did? I looked at it and I go, let's just file an extension. I'll worry about it. But we appreciate you tuning in, being a part of the broadcast again today. Got some exciting news. I flew on Sunday morning to go down and be with Tony Garitano's Progress in Lending event, the Innovation Awards banquet and event, and found out that the radio program, Lickin' on Lending, won an Innovation Award. So thank you so much to the board of directors for selecting us. And I just really, for a guy, I got to the microphone and they said, say something. I go, you know what, for a guy that runs a radio program, I was actually speechless. Very grateful. Appreciate it. We are trying to do something innovative. Not trying, we are. We don't try, we do. To use the prophet doctor's statement, don't try, do. And we are. We are doing something that has not been done before with this level, with this level of success in the industry. We're bringing you up-to-date, up-to-the-minute information of what's going on across the country. And it's a real honor to be a part of your way, your method of gathering information about this mortgage industry. Again, this is for mortgage professionals, produced by mortgage professionals, and you can sure tell at times it is definitely not done by those with a lot of training when it comes to radio. But we appreciate you tolerating that aspect of it and just having us be a part of your information gathering process. We're going to have Paul Mallow on just a little bit later talking, giving us an update on the news as soon as he dials in. Also, Frank Pallotta is going to be on with the Loan Value Group because we're kicking off a series on loan servicing. It's a real honor to have Frank back on the radio. We recorded a segment from him when I was in New York at the Secondary Conference just about coming up on a year ago. And we played that segment. It was a great interview. Really looking forward to his comments as we kick off the series on loan servicing. Is this time to get into servicing? What's the pros and cons? We're going to have a series of guests over the next few weeks talking about that topic, and I'm honored to have Frank kick off this discussion. Let's see here. Alice Alvey would normally be jumping in at this moment to give her update, but I talked to her over the weekend. Her voice was absolutely terrible, and she goes, Dave, I've got to talk on Tuesday. Can you do my segment? So this is my attempt to give you an update on everything on the legislative update. I'll do it quickly because we have a lot to talk about. But the FHA may get money from the Treasury. The President Obama's budget includes over $934 million from the Treasury to shore up FHA. That's certainly good news. I really wasn't too worried about it going away, but that is an update that Alice wanted me to share with you. Also, there's no word on LO compensation. And it's probably looking more like, or at least the LO comp as relates to QM. It's something that we'll probably not hear much on for another few more months. And so we can just kind of sit there and listen and anticipate. So listen to the blogs. Again, we got that LinkedIn discussion group, loan origination, compensation, and new rules. Go out there and check it out. A lot of good discussion now all over the map on all kinds of topics related to originations. I tried to contain it to just Kello Comp, and then I found out this thing's taken off. It is now up to nearly, I think it's 5,600 members the last time. I approved a bunch more last night. Every day, 10, 15 members getting approved of that. It's nearly approaching 6,000 members, and it's an active board. Appreciate you if you just go check it out. Let's go find out what's going on in the markets. Joe, I actually jumped Alice's segment out there because I got my notes up, and I got my iPad about ready to die out here on me. So I wanted to get in and give you a quick – well, let's see. I just see Paul just jumped in. Joe, if you can hang on just for a minute. I want to get Paul Mallow on because he is – we appreciate him being a part of the broadcast, and he's got such a limited amount of time. So, Paul, good to have you on the broadcast. What's in the news that you're tracking today?
Well, a number of different things. We
finally calculated all the buyback numbers, and it looks like buybacks through the GSEs dropped about 10% last year. And, you know, I think the number was about $20.57 billion.
Wow.
Yeah, it's still a huge number, but, you know, it looks like it's trending downward, and that's good news for the industry.
I heard Freddie Mac is trending up a bit. Are you hearing anything about that Freddie Mac is actually increasing buybacks?
Well, there was a slight uptick in the fourth quarter, but for the full year, buybacks were down.
Okay, so the big macro trend line is still down. Good.
Yeah, the macro trend line's down. There could be isolated cases where, you know, someone might come up with a settlement with one of the GSEs and cause the number to spike. I mean, listen, this is one of the biggest issues facing the industry today. I mean, this and Fannie Freddie changes in their net worth minimums, if that ever comes about. I mean, you know, there's a lot of fear for, you know, what's ahead.
Right.
And, you know, it appears that the GSEs are softening to some degree. You know, we could have a new FHFA chairman in the next director, I should say, in the next year. That news broke over the weekend. Mark Zandi.
Apparently, Zandi
is a real candidate. It's not just one of those rumor things, you know, kicking around Washington. So
that could be interesting. What's your thought on Zandi? I mean, if Mark comes in and he's well respected, one of the more respected economists out there. What's your thoughts on that? Any reflections?
You know, I haven't interviewed him lately. I've interviewed him over the years. You know, I've seen him on TV like everyone else has. You know, he seemed like a pretty competent guy who's very, you know, moderate and smart. And, you know, he was one of the few who called this, I think, housing crash early, or at least the severity of it. And, you know, he also just seems to be calling correctly the recovery. You know, some people might think he's a little over bullish on the recovery in housing values. But, he seems like he's a person that would be acceptable to both parties to some degree. You know, the litmus test for the FIFA position appears to be, you know, have you ever come out in favor of principal reductions? And if you have,
yeah,
you're automatically out for the job. But, you know, that could be changing, too. And you know, listen, DeMarco has a lot of respect in this town, at least among the Republicans.
Yes.
A lot of people in the industry who are moderates and even Democrats who, you know, applaud the job he's done as a conservator of the GSEs. And listen, the other big issue we've been writing about for the last couple of weeks is the huge profits that both are posting. In the fourth quarter, they had combined earnings of $12 billion. I mean, that's real money. And it's, you know, it's not going away. I mean,
yeah,
Fannie and Freddie aren't going to start, you know, posting large loan loss reserves because, you know, the worst appears to be over. And they're going to be cash cows, and all that money gets swept right into the U.S. Treasury.
Well, that's really interesting. I got something on that I got to talk to you. But anything else in the news that we have before I go to my ping you with one question?
Sure. No. Well, you know, there's a number of big servicing deals out there. IMA is working on one. Prestwick, and I know Mountain View's all got portfolios out there. B of A is in the market with another large one. So servicing the return of the bulk market is something that we've been tracking for quite a while as well. So
now, is this in addition to B of A's, the newest one? Is this addition to the billion-dollar one that they are some – was it over a billion that they announced here a couple weeks
ago? We wrote about one
about
last week.
Yeah.
There's a $16 billion one which hit the market. We got confirmed from three sources. I don't know if B of A, a lot of times, unless it's a huge offering, they won't confirm it or talk about it. They'll talk about it after it's publicly announced, like that deal they did earlier in the year where they sold like $300 billion in servicing. That's a material event. They had to announce that, as did their buyers, because both their buyers were public companies. So it all depends on the size and the timing of the deal.
Well, let's see. There's so much going on. How do you track and what to write about, Paul? There is just a target-rich environment, to use that one line from that Top Gun movie. It's a target-rich environment out there. I mean, what are you really just tracking on and zeroing in on?
Well, you know, we have a new website.
What do you select story? Yeah.
Yeah, the new website is www.imfnews.com. I talk to the editors and reporters here. John Bancroft is our editor-in-chief, and he's our data cruncher, too. So he sees a lot of trends. He's almost like an analyst, and he crunches the data all the time from the loan-level databases we have on Fannie, Freddie, and Ginnie. You know, and I talk to people on a daily basis. I'm either emailing or talking to people constantly throughout the data, you know, sort of get a pulse on the market. I mean, Fannie and Freddie, anything to do with Fannie and Freddie, is huge. M&A is always huge. There seems to be a lot of personnel changes out there in the industry as well. David Lohman, who used to be the head of Chase's mortgage group and I think also worked at Citi for a while, he recently got hired by Freddie Mac to be the head of their single family business, and that's a big deal. We're covering the waterfront. QM is huge. QRM, loan officer comp. You know, those are all issues we're watching constantly. We have a newsletter that covers the CFPB.
Right.
We have one that focuses just on the GSEs. I mean, you know, again, anything to do with the GSEs, since they have such a huge market share, is, you know, big news to everyone in the industry. And the other big issue this year is, where loan production is headed. The extension of the HARP program last week was big news, and a lot of people feel good about that. You know, will we keep this refi thing going or not?
Yes. That's interesting thoughts. I'm going to be I'm in Memphis, Tennessee, speaking tomorrow at the Tri-State Convention, Paul, and I am in at a TV studio because I'm getting asked to comment on your boss's comment that just appeared in USA Today. And Guy Sakala made a comment about the fact that credit seems to be loosening, and so Neil Cavuto has asked me to come on. We're taping a segment this afternoon right after the radio broadcast talking about that. So tell Guy thanks for his comments. I get to comment on his comments on national television. What's your thoughts? Do you see 5%, 10% down has been around, you know, all along? But is it more people offering it? Or what's your thoughts on the down payment per se?
Well, here's the deal, and Guy could tell you all about this as well, and we'll write about it on imfnews.com, and we have. Basically, you have certain portfolio lenders out there, and credit unions are part of this. You know, they don't have to worry about Fannie and Freddie. I mean, credit unions, you know, like Navy Federal here in D.C., I mean, they're the largest credit union player in the U.S. in mortgages. And, you know, they're advertising a no-down payment loan. Depending on, you know, you got to be a member of the credit union, no down payment loan, no mortgage insurance, and they'll put it in portfolio. So, they've been doing that loan a while, but they're doing more of it now. There's a couple other credit unions doing the same. As we've written before on imfnews.com about, you know, there's a number of jumbo lenders who are making loans, and they're not selling them into securities. They're keeping them in portfolio, like Union Bank in San Francisco, which is a great example of a portfolio lender of jumbos. You know, we're seeing more of that. And also it appears that some of the bigger boys like Wells are, you know, ceding market share, you know, almost purposely, that, you know, they're cutting back a little bit because of Basel III and this and that. And, you know, so, you know, we are seeing the rise of the non-banks to some degree. We're also seeing the rise of certain banks, like U.S. Bancorp is moved up amazingly. You got a company, everyone knows them.
Yeah,
you got them. You have Quicken Loans, which is phenomenal growth over the last 5 years.
No kidding.
It's really amazing. The Quicken stories, you know, we've tried to interview them. They seem a little press shy to the trade press. That's a great story, what Quicken's done. You have some large lenders in California that have, like Stearns, that have really continued to hum along. And Chris George's company, CMG, is, they're privately held. And I know they have a deal with one of the financial service companies is like a sponsor, and they've had really strong growth out there. So, you know, it's interesting to watch those non-banks move up.
Well, let's try to get Bill Emerson to open up there a little bit. I spoke on a panel with him here recently, president of Quicken, so let's see if we can't do that. He's a good guy, really very, very good commentary when he and I shared on a panel discussion here at the Merit Catalyst event. Paul, thanks so much for taking time. Again, where can people get a hold and read your blog? It's probably one of the best. And I got a compliment to you again from another professional.
Thank you. Only three W's. www.imfnews.com.
Excellent. And again, that's a part of a Mortgage Insight, Inside of Mortgage Finance. Guy Sakala's company. And I'm just so glad to have you part of this, Paul. and being a part of this each and every week and sharing your thoughts, some of the things. Folks, go out, grab that column, get that every week, read it. I mean, every day. It's published daily. A lot of stuff. Again, Jay Brinkman, some of the folks at the NBA say that's one of the first things they read is your as soon as you hit the send button, they're reading it. So appreciate you being a part of the broadcast.
And, thanks for having me.
Folks, you bet. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan, if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker-to-banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Joe Farr, good to have you. I know, folks, we mixed up the order just a little bit here. I started off going into talking about Alice's segment, and then we kicked off with Paul. But, Joe, we're going to stick with our normal segment. We'll have Joe back on first for those of you that really like order and predictability. We'll have Joe back on every single time hitting off. But, Joe, let's talk about today. MBS prices are up 3/32nds. You shared earlier. Is that still the case?
No, they've rallied a little bit. In fact, we're just putting out an early notice that it's probably a good time to be floating. It's MBS prices now up 6/32nds, and that's 4 or 5 above most the morning pricing levels, and certainly is an opportunity. May take a little more improvement for the favorable price changes to materialize, but it's certainly a good possibility right now.
Very good. So what's driving the rally today? Anything
it's got to have to do with what's driving gold and the stock market. Right. You know, the stock market's down about 160 points right now, right. And gold's down $130 an ounce, and you know, that's the big story today, and it's got the markets a little bit concerned, I think, and as a result, people are kind of going to the safety of the government-guaranteed market. The treasuries our yields are down a bit as mortgage-backed security prices are up. So, we're really seeing a historical drop in gold prices this morning.
I know.
Actually, over the last couple of days. And,
last couple of days, yeah.
We're down 130, I think, today. 200 plus on the last couple of days, and that's down from where we're just under 1,400. That's down from 1,800 an ounce not too long ago. So it's been a pretty steep fall here the last couple of days, and it seems to hinge on or to have come about due to a couple of things. One is the economic data out of China was weak this morning, and China's a big buyer of gold, and to the extent that they're not going to be generating as much revenue, it kind of puts a change on the supply or the demand side for gold. But that wouldn't have been as big an issue had it not been on the heels of some of the European central banks talking about selling their stockpile of gold. And so that's going to, if they were to do that, that'd put a big supply on the market. So, yeah, it's and gold had just gone so high, since 07, the middle of 07, it had risen from, what was it? It was like in the close to 600 an ounce all the way up to 1,800 an ounce. And so it was time to come back a little bit, but
this is
last couple
a
days are a little concerning.
This is more than a little bit. I mean, this may set up for an interest. And, you know, they were talking about gold going to $3,000 an ounce and beyond. I mean, it's just like you start hearing these crazy numbers. It sounds like the housing market back in the old days. So, I understand the value of gold, but I just never gotten it for the average person to be out there be buying it. So, anyway. Let's talk about
with all the quantitative easing that was going on, Dave. It made sense. I mean, people were very concerned, rightfully so, that the big supply of money in the marketplace was going to lead to inflation. It just hadn't.
No, it hadn't.
So, also this morning, the home builders came out a little weakness in their confidence. The New York Empire State Index was a little weak, but the home builders were interesting. As Paul was talking about credit, and you were talking about 10% down, the home builders have three primary concerns. One is they're obtaining their own credit to build the houses, but the other part of it is the very restrictive, or in their mind, the restrictive mortgage lending rules that are out there right now, making enough buyers able to finance the purchase of a home. And then they've got rising construction costs, which would make sense given that there has been a pickup in activity and there's very few lots to build on. But, those are all kind of good concerns. It's concerns because of a need to do more. It's just
exactly
an inability to do more. So.
Yeah. Yeah, obtaining construction credit would be one of the bigger ones. I would assume that, not for the biggest of the big guys, but they have access to the public markets, but for a lot of the others. Well, let's talk a little bit about last week. It was really interesting. Some of the things that didn't happen, I guess. There were a couple ways to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, last week, we remember the Thursday and Friday prior was the Bank of Japan and the jobs report. MBS prices improved tremendously. And we gave a little bit of that back early in the week, but by the end of last week, we were right back to where we started the week, where we ended the post jobs pricing, and so we held on to those higher prices, lower yields, in spite of a really nice run up. And so there were a couple issues during the week that could have been a problem. For instance, FOMC minutes were released, and each of the last few times they've come out, they've seemed to indicate more concern from part of the committee that they should stop buying mortgage-backed securities sooner rather than later. And as you might guess, that has hurt mortgage-backed security prices, but this time it didn't. And I think it didn't primarily because of the very weak jobs report that had come out. The minutes were of a meeting that preceded that jobs report. The jobs report was weak by just about all measures. And so the minutes reflecting what was said in light of the weak jobs report that had just come out really didn't hurt the market as much as you might have expected.
Interesting. Yeah. It was kind of, so the weak numbers kind of kept the market just pretty much new, because it's pretty much unchanged all last week overall.
For the week, or 2/32 from where we started the week. So it's really pretty small.
One of the things I noticed in your notes was consumer sentiment. I'm really interested in that. I mean, that's a number I think has an emotional component, but certainly something that it fell as well.
It did. I mean, we had a nice day in the mortgage market on Friday. We gained about 12/32, which helped us to offset. You know, I told you earlier in the week there were some, we gave a little of those profits back from the week before. But, you know, one of the reasons was consumer sentiment was low. Retail sales was low. And fortunately, inflation was non-issue. So the weakness there, and then also remember on Friday we're starting to see that the gold sell off, so it could have created a little bit of a shift to other assets like U.S. mortgage-backed securities. But you got to have the consumer out there. Retail sales account for about 70% of the GDP, and need to have the consumer happy.
Got to have a happy consumer. We don't have it. It's like when mom is not happy, no one happy at the house. If the consumer's not happy, the economy's not happy. So it's really.
That's right.
Well, let's talk about this week. Or is there anything else last week that we need to cover?
That is pretty well it. This week is a fairly light week for economic data. CPI comes out tomorrow, and it's expected to show inflation remains under control, a 0.2 increase.
Yeah.
Housing starts and industrial production also come out tomorrow. jobless claims in Philly Fed on Thursday, and you know, none of those. I mean, CPI can be a big market mover, but no one's really expecting, and it's been it's showing that inflation's just not an issue right now. So I guess the big issue for the week this week is likely to be how far and what happens with this commodity sell-off and the dropping price of gold and the stock market. You know, hopefully this isn't indicating a topping out of the stock market, but that'll be on investors' mind as we go into this week.
Joe, appreciate you so much bringing this to us each and every week and being a part of the broadcast. I was able to thank you without an absentia from the podium last night as they accepted the award. You and Alice and the Prophet Doctor and Tony, I mean, the whole group is just makes this such a successful broadcast for so many. We really appreciate you being a part of it. Folks, want to learn more about how to get signed up with MBS Quote Line? Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
You know what? I'm always impressed with a doctor that's teaching at a medical facility and is also practicing. The Prophet Doctor is not only a practicing doctor, but he also teaches at a medical facility. So we've got the Prophet Doctor with us. He's out traveling, but he has taken time out. I just always want him on here. And he is actually, we're going to talk about some of the teaching he is doing through Campus MBA. And you're in the midst of another very successful webinar through Campus MBA. Talk to us about it, Andy.
Well, we're teaching people about what ultimately leads to the ability to manage your business. Because as mortgage bankers, as mortgage lenders, as commercial banks making mortgage loans, we need to understand what we're doing, how much money we're making per loan, per branch, per originator, per office, per product. And so a lot of companies don't have that level of granularity, and they really need to have it. And so what this webinar gets into is the overview of mortgage banking, the process flow of mortgage banking, the participants that drive the flow of cash and the flow of revenue and expense through a mortgage bank, and the processes that are needed to capture that data in order to be able to correctly record it into the accounting systems, which is a surprisingly complicated process, and then all the way through into hedging and how hedging works, how hedging is applied to mortgage lending, whether, again, doesn't matter if you're a commercial bank or a credit union or a mortgage lender of any sort, this all still applies. And what's been interesting is that even for the commercial banks who have been doing regulatory reporting for my lifetime, they're still having questions and hitting nuances because mortgage lending activity, the flow of mortgage banking generates activity that has unique characteristics that under GAAP requires special reporting for even FDIC, OCC, in addition to the NMLS. So we get into all that detail, hedging, how to deal with derivative assets and interest rate lock commitments that create a derivative asset and derivative gains or losses and the effect that these have on the P&L. Because at the end of the day, ultimately, what we're trying to get to is people to learn how to read the X-ray. It's a little bit of self-diagnosis. We want for people to have really good X-rays and also teach them how to read them.
Well, I think it's significant that some of the ones that are attending this are bankers, and because we know that a lot of independent mortgage bankers need need some training on this. I mean, there's some great knowledge in the independent mortgage banking world, but we know there's some really solid stuff because you can't survive in a bank. But it's interesting to me, Andy, that the number of banks, regulated institutions, that are coming to you for advice and going, you know what, this is different. Talk about that, because you would think the bankers who have these, some of the best CPAs and, you know, brightest minds in the financial, you know, accounting area, and they're coming to you and go, Andy, this is, talk to us, you know, talk to our listeners a little bit about some of the comments you're getting from the banking community. And if it's true in the banking community, how much more so is it true within the independent mortgage banking world?
Exactly. Well, you know, I'm a certified public accountant. Joe Farr is a certified public accountant. Both Joe and I have been CFOs of mortgage
companies. Which means you guys know the secret handshake. I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, we know the secret password, the secret handshake. I've also been a CFO of a commercial bank. And what I can tell you is that just because you're a CPA does not mean you know the nuances of mortgage lending. People have looked at the broker activity as being, that's what mortgage lending is. Take an application, send it off to somebody else, you get a check back as your fee, and that's all you do. Well, for that, you might as well just be a lemonade stand. What we're talking about in mortgage banking is more like building intercontinental ballistic missile silos. It is complicated.
Which you've done as well.
It is precision. It is, well, I'll give you a quick analogy. Okay, Dave?
Yeah.
I know that you love sailing. I had the opportunity to go out sailing recently, and I was watching the captain of the boat. And whenever the wind on the sail moved just very, very slightly, and I had the opportunity to sit with the captain, and actually he showed me how to what to do and how to pull and what to do. And it's all about the tension and the direction of the sail.
Right.
The wind drives the sail, and the sail drives the boat. And so you watching that tension is just essential. And what you have to do is you have to make immediate reactions, but they're very subtle adjustments. You make very subtle adjustments instantaneously, constantly. And that's what you need to do to be able to manage a mortgage lending operation. You need to make subtle adjustments constantly, immediate subtle adjustments. But how do you know what adjustments to make? How do you tell what the wind's doing if you don't have the right reports to get them? So this circles all the way back to technology, getting the right data, with people being trained to put the right data into the system, have an interface back up to accounting where all of the fees from the HUD-1 are captured and all the detail is captured in the system, to then be able to generate the KPI reports that come out every single day that give management of the company the visibility to see the sale. If they can see the sale, they can see what the wind's doing. If they can see what the wind's doing, they know how to make the adjustments. Mortgage companies get capsized when they can't see the effect on their business from the changes in the wind, and that's all driven by getting good reports, having good information going into accounting. It's complicated. It's new. There's a nuance to it that's unique. That's why these commercial bankers are coming to the webinar now, because they realize that, wow, this is different. This is complicated. Most of the time, Dave, I'm spending, 4 years ago, I worked almost probably 90% with mortgage companies. Now I spend probably 90% of my time with commercial banks. We're teaching CPAs who audit mortgage companies and commercial banks, and they're having lots of questions. There's a veil being pulled back where the complexity of mortgage lending is being revealed more and more, and we're fortunate enough to be the guys up there with the chalk on the razor board going, you know, this is that, and this is that, and this is that. Watch out for this, be careful about that. And thanks a lot to Lincoln on Lending, getting the word out and letting people know that it's an amazing business. It's a business that can generate additional revenue in a big way for commercial banks. But if there's nuances to it, you got to understand.
So you're at the blackboard with your white lab coat on, or your doctor's coat, and your stethoscope stuck in your pocket, and teaching away. That's impressive. Appreciate Andy you bringing this to us, and then also best of luck on this webinar. I know the MBA was telling me about it. There was someone from the MBA there that spoke last week. I spoke at the Oklahoma Mortgage Bankers Annual Conference as a keynote luncheon speaker, and several people walked up to me and said, I love your business partners webinar. So, folks, if you're not signed up for this, it's not too late. Go log in, sign up for it, whatever time's left of it, and they'll be doing it again and again and again. But get signed up and get what you can. Andy Schell, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, and that's Campus MBA. Go to mortgagebankers.org, look around for Campus MBA, go to the webinars, and then click on loan accounting. And that's
loan
it.
Accounting. That's it. They're
accounting for
MBA.
Mortgage banking. Yep.
Well, folks, we're going to be back in just a minute with Frank Pallotta, Executive Vice President, Managing Partner of the Loan Value Group. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief word.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Appreciate you being with us. Hey, special thank you to our sponsors, United Guarantee and Alamo's Back. And special thank you to both these sponsors to make this possible. Get out there and tell your local rep how much you appreciate them sponsoring this broadcast. And we've been talking with United Guarantee. The fact that we're doing, I'll be talking today at Cavuto about, with the Neil Cavuto show on Fox Business, about the down payments that there seems to be a loosening of credit, and that the 5% and 10% down payment programs are really getting a lot more attention. So that involves PMI, very significant. I'm excited to have as our broad with us on the broadcast today, Frank Pallott, Executive Vice President and Managing Partner with the Loan Value Group. And Frank has got a 20-year veteran of the mortgage, residential mortgage space, has worked closely with some of the largest financial institutions in the country. He's worked with the GSEs, the Treasury Department, and his experience includes all aspects of origination, underwriting, servicing, securitization, loss, and it's amazing because he's only 30 years old. I mean, no, it's a little bit older than that. He's a prodigy. Frank, good to have you with us on the broadcast. I enjoyed that interview of you last year so much. Was it a year ago? Couldn't have been 2 years ago. I think it was last year, wasn't it?
No, it was last year, David. Yep.
Yeah, good. I enjoyed that interview so much when I was there at the secondary conference, and it's just a real honor to have you back, Frank. You have some great comments about you opened my eyes to a new approach to the whole loan servicing. So we're starting a series of broadcasts on loan servicing again, and I really thought about you kicking this off for us as we talk about some of the programs that are out there. But, you know, just generally speaking, to our audience that is considering retaining servicing, what's your perspective on it? Is this the time to be kind of be considering to get back into it or get into it the first time?
Well, by the way, Dave, thank you very much for having me on again. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, that's an
honor. The servicing industry, look, I think everybody knows, anyone in the mortgage industry knows that servicing is not going to be the same. You know, origination is never going to be the same. Underwriting is never going to be the same. There's money to be made in servicing. I think the real money from a servicing standpoint and the reason to get into the game is when you have scale.
Yeah.
The regulatory oversight that you're going to see, you know, the borrower is actually a bit more savvy and a lot more armed than they were only 3 or 4 years ago. So I think if you're looking at the servicing industry, I think scale is important. I think technology
right.
is important. I think we all know, David, that you know, for decades, you know, servicing was probably the redheaded stepchild of the mortgage industry. There wasn't a lot of time and money and effort and technology put into it, and there's a lot of catch up to be had.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the news with, you know, servicing, the big boys, the scale. It seems like it's, and many people have this perception, Frank, it's only for the biggest of the big. It's only the largest financial institutions can afford to do that. I mean, there's certainly some scale involved here, but it's certainly not just exclusively just for the biggest of the big guys.
No, it's not, David. I think, you know, for a long, long time you had primary and you had special. And, you know, it was really just the opposite ends of the spectrum. The primary was where it made sense and scale made sense. And even if you didn't have a lot of scale, you know, you were clipping 25 basis points of coupon for a function that at the low end might cost you 2 or 3, at the high end it might cost you 8 or 10. So it was a pretty good margin business. But right now you've got a lot of different sort of nuances in within primary, a lot of different nuances within special servicing. So if you find a niche as a servicer and you do it well, there's absolutely a lot of money to be made regardless of whether, you know, you're clipping GSE 25 basis points or you're looking at highly distressed assets.
Let's talk a little, shift a little bit to HARP. I mean, we now see that HARP has been extended for a period of time. I know you've made comments that saying that HARP may not be reaching its potential by helping those borrowers who need it the most. Give us some thoughts on HARP and your perspective on that, and then we're going to toss the mic to Andy Schell.
Sure, sure. Well, HARP, look, I think HARP is a terrific program. You know, HARP was intended, I think, start to finish to help underwater borrowers. And, you know, even though HARP, the LTV range on HARP starts at 85 and it's got an unlimited cap, it's really targeted to those consumers that need the most help. I think anyone else in the industry who's been in it a while also knows the more underwater you are, the more distressed you are, irrespective of whether you've made your payments. The higher the LTV, the more risk the homeowner as well as the owner of the loan, whether it be Fannie or Freddie or Ginnie or a bank. So, you know, my point about I don't think HARP reaching its full potential is my personal view, and I think the industry sees this, is there's a tremendous amount of HARPs getting done, and it's picking up, but it's really getting done for the most part. You know, more than 80 or 85% of all the HARPs getting done these days are on loans where the LTV is lower than 110.
No, interesting.
And, you know, so it's really, you know, there's a few reasons why that's the case, David, but until we really start addressing the very high LTV borrowers, it's going to be a real tough go in the market.
Well, Frank, hi, it's Andy. Good having you on on the show. I have a follow-up to that HARP question, and that is, you know, if HARP was originally designed or initially designed to help with the borrowers who are high risk or high LTV, and what are some of the reasons that the banks and servicers are not reaching out to some of those borrowers if that's why the program was designed to begin with?
You know, Andy, that's a great question, and I think you take a step back and take a look at what the banks or the large lenders, what their business is about. You know, their business is about, at least from a servicing standpoint, you want to keep the customer. And if you really take a look at two customers right now, let's look at a 90 LTV borrower and a 190 LTV borrower. The 90 LTV borrower right now could be solicited by any servicer. So it is in the current servicer's best interest to make sure that they get that low LTV borrower before they disappear somewhere else. On the other side of the situation, you've got a 190 LTV borrower. Well, the truth be told, a 190 LTV borrower really has no place to go but their own servicer. So it's almost a situation where the large servicer will eventually get to the high-risk borrower, but if they want to make hay while the sun shines, it's got to be on the borrower who is, I guess, what they would consider the low-hanging fruit, and they get to them before they disappear. So they're just prioritizing by LTV, which is counterintuitive when you look at risk.
Great, thanks. Appreciate the information.
Sure, Andy.
Joe, I'll let you dive into this. Have you? Joe,
while Joe's getting on there, I actually have a follow-up to that. Is there a financial incentive other than trying to preserve the lower LTV customers? Is there a financial benefit the servicers or banks have in pursuing the lower LTV borrowers? Is there a pricing difference? I mean, do they make different amounts of money on the lower LTV versus the higher LTV?
No, you know what? They don't make more or less. But the truth is, if you look at a servicing package in the market, and one package is, again, we go to the very high LTV and the other is a very low LTV, the lower LTV servicing portfolio will trade much better. So from a mark-to-market or a true value standpoint, you want a lower LTV portfolio.
Right.
So that really is one of the bigger reasons I think that's the case. And also, you know, a bank, again, clips a pretty good coupon or a pretty good revenue stream on a HARP. You know, it's anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000. So my view is they're moving pretty quickly to get the borrowers that are the shortest path. And also another thing is it takes typically a bit longer to get a HARP done if it's a high LTV HARP versus a very easy lower LTV HARP.
I see. Good insight. Thank you.
I'm unmuted now.
Joe,
that darn mute button.
There we go.
But yeah, Frank, you hear a lot about borrowers, especially anyone who's been in a little bit of trouble, is hesitant to communicate with the servicer. So, is it an issue to get in touch with people, and then once you get in touch with them, how agreeable do they seem in ultimately doing a HARP loan with you?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. We've spent, David had mentioned that we've spent, LVG has spent a bunch of time down in D.C. talking to Treasury and some of the bigger players, and we've actually brought that up to them. I think even Fannie Mae put out a report recently that indicated that the higher LTV borrowers are not harping to the degree they should be. And what it's really come down to, and you said the key word was really communication. Most of our programs that we've launched for either MIs or banks or servicers about updating and educating a borrower about their eligibility for a HARP is 100% focused on talking to the borrower, educating the borrower on what they potentially qualify for, what the benefits are. If as a servicer you don't have an outreach platform or you don't have the ability to communicate with your borrower to tell them why the HARP benefits them, truth be told, it comes across as a cold call, and those calls are usually ended pretty quickly. We've spent the better part of the last 4 years in a lot of our programs way before HARP really started to kick off, and what we've learned is the relationship with the consumer, especially on the servicing side, is more important now than it's ever been. When you have distressed borrowers, to your point, and upside down borrowers, so the relationship.
So how do you go about
key.
Making them answer that call? Not making them, but how do you go about
enticing them,
getting them to answer those calls and then to talk with you?
Well, LVG has been about incentive programs for 4 years, and some of the incentive programs early on were about rewarding consumers for staying current, rewarding consumers for deeds and lieus and short sales and things like that. The beautiful thing about HARP is HARP in and of itself is an incentive. So, in this case, it's just about presenting the incentive to the consumer. And again, this taps into, incentive theory and behavioral economics is once the consumer understands what the incentive is and the incentive is an attainable incentive, then it becomes a much easier conversation with the borrower. So our education and outreach campaign is really about taking the incentive, which they don't have it now, but showing them that the path to the incentive, the light at the end of the tunnel, is very short and very easy, and then the conversation becomes a much easier one to have. So, for example, I know it sounds silly to say, well, gee, a lower coupon equals a lower payment, and shouldn't everybody want to do that? I think we all know on the phone, and everybody, David, in your studio audience, you get calls, you get mail, you get things dropped. There's probably a half a dozen a week different sort of pushes, whether it's somebody selling you something over the phone or refinance now sort of thing. So you have to figure out how you cut through all that to really present as an owner of risk the true opportunity to the borrower and make them understand that they can benefit.
And that's really what your program is about. Loan Value Group has created something of a proprietary product and process. Get into that a little bit if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. You had Paul on a little bit earlier, and Paul talked about credit unions briefly. And, David, you were talking about 5 and 10% down, and is this the time? And Paul had mentioned that credit unions for a long time, that's what they have been doing. And credit union performance is tremendous. And the one difference between the credit unions with low down payments, where they're able to get performance, the relationship with the consumer is different. Historically, servicing has always been about a reactive action or a reactive process. The consumer goes delinquent, you try and get to them. The better servicers got to the borrowers faster than others, but there's been no servicing operation that has been proactive. And that's really what our programs have been about, reaching out to the consumer who on the surface would look to be distressed before they show signs of distress. The way we sort of do it, it's a terrible analogy sometimes, but it's easier to pull somebody back from the cliff than to pull them up off the cliff after they've jumped. And it's much cheaper to do that.
That's good. Oh, Frank, it's Andy again. You made an interesting comment about behavioral economics, and that made me think of the Capital One commercial where they go, spending less is better, right? Spending less is better, right? It's like, how do you make it as simple as that?
You know, it, Go ahead, Andy. I'm sorry.
No, no. You have a thought. Go ahead and give me a thought.
Again, from the behavioral standpoint, and we really sort of tapped into this for a long time on the concept of what you'd have to spend to get a borrower to use the analogy again back after they've jumped off the cliff. The servicing operations are very expensive to run when you have borrowers chasing consumers down. And I'll just throw a number out. And you know, if it costs $1,000 a year to get a borrower who is chronically delinquent on a very, very large loan balance, and that's cost of advancing, cost of collection, costs of, you know, that go all the way down to possibly door knockers. From a behavioral science standpoint, it costs you in some cases 2, 3, or 4% of that money to keep the borrower from ever going delinquent. So, you know, it's the ounce of preventative medicine that costs you nothing that servicers are starting to realize. And quite honestly, Ally Bank and Rady and a few others have realized that a cheaper sort of solution is to be more proactive.
Well, you had mentioned earlier that it sounds like the servicers are going after the lower LTV customers first because it just seems like a better relationship stick, I guess. So I was curious then about do servicers need to make operational changes to their current platform in order to implement a borrower outreach program?
You know, they certainly need a different mindset. I don't think it's a different operation. For example, I think loan officers make the outgoing calls to the borrowers. A loan officer compensation structure is different. A loan officer is compensated to get a loan. A loan officer shouldn't be bothered, or not that they shouldn't be. They typically don't want to spend a lot of time on the phone educating a consumer as to why they should HARP. So I don't know if they've got a time clock in their head, whatever the case is. The structure of an LO making an outgoing call to entice or educate a borrower doesn't make sense. Our LVG call center reps are not compensated on a loan closing. They're compensated on the success of a warm transfer. They're compensated on the success of the consumer understanding that they are now you know, eligible for a benefit. So if I had to say the servicer, if there was something they had to address to do something different, the thought might be, you know, figure out how you can educate your consumer. Figure out how you can do that. Maybe it's with a different call center within their operation. But, you know, the other thing that I think maybe, and this is, you know, pretty counterintuitive, and I think a lot of servicers, I hope they don't tune out of your show, David, but I think sometimes what might be in the best interest of the consumer is for the servicer to figure out how to possibly move that borrower to another client if they can't, another servicer, another lender, if they can't get to them. I think that's the right thing to do.
That's interesting. Joe?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, Frank, I wanted to find out how you mentioned success, but how do you measure success in your program, and do you have statistics that kind of can help our listeners understand that success that you bring on?
Sure. Specifically in the HARP program, Joe, you know, we're hired by, you know, either an MI or a bank or a servicer with the where our role is create an education outreach awareness campaign for us, and then transfer a borrower who you believe is ready to begin the application process back to us. So there's a few measures of success. The first measure of success is how many people we get a hold of. And our contact rates for all of our programs over the years have been in about the mid-80s. Mid 80%,
wow,
which is really, really high. And that's honestly, that's what we do. We're not about, you know, closing a loan. We're not about doing it. We're about contacting the borrower to bring them an offering. The other measure of success we have, and this is a measure of success from the lender's standpoint, is the number of people that we contact and we warm transfer over to them, how many of those people start the application process. That's about 45 to 50%. Actually start the application process, and not, you know, here's my name, call me later, but truly begin the process. So those are the two what I think are pretty good measures of success, and then, you know, we have a number of lenders in our network that are, when the borrower is transferred over to them, it is absolutely their goal, and it is our measure of them to make sure that the consumer, I forget who it was earlier who mentioned consumer satisfaction, consumers being transferred over to begin the HARP process. And, you know, that again, is the measure that we give to the lenders in our network, potentially, or the servicers that we work with, is to make sure that they get the borrower through the process.
You know, kind of interesting to me that so few go to that next step. You know, you said it's
right.
45-50%.
Exactly.
Well,
yep.
Why don't more?
You know what?
I'm not saying you're doing anything wrong. But, I mean.
No. I look. I agree with you, and I think intuitively, us on the phone would think, well, gee, if you show somebody an absolute, you know, drop dead no brainer, why shouldn't they do it? A home purchase or a, you know, slash refinance, it's still the biggest investment any borrower, you know, is ever going to make. You know, you still have, David, you had mentioned consumer confidence earlier, that,
right.
You know, that plays a big role. Home prices, I think for the first time, you know, over the course of the last 6 or 8 months, you've seen consistent home price appreciation. You are starting to see those numbers go up a little bit more. But consumers are always skeptical when it comes to, even though a HARP really, in theory, shouldn't cost any money, we've been faced with too good to be true scenarios for 4 years in our LVG programs. So we've gotten good at making the borrowers understand. Those numbers are getting up, but you're absolutely right. You scratch your head and you think, if there's no downside, why don't more people do it? It'll get there. I think there's more of an understanding that the borrower is not being, you know, this is not a skeptical outreach. And also you have, you know, they want to talk to their brother-in-law, they want to talk to their spouse, they want to talk to their own lender. We help them there as well.
I think it makes sense that, you know, you reach out to these guys. And it's probably through more educational programs than anything else to really educate the borrower that you're really here to help them do something. It's not just another trick or scheme
mm-hmm.
or scam of some sort. But let's talk about how the industry can help borrowers to help themselves. Your program's one, and I think it's an outstanding program. But, you know, how can the industry help borrowers?
I think there's got to be a little more focus now, and it can't be a short-term focus. Servicing has to be a proactive model. You know, borrowers, servicers, again, I had said it earlier, were always reactive. The only time they really thought that they were being proactive was less on the servicing and more on the primary side was, you know, back in 05, 06, 07, when they were really, really smiling and dialing and calling people, hey, it's time to get a mortgage. Hey, no money down. Hey, no application. Hey, yeah, stated LTV loans. I think if the world didn't blow up, that would have been the next big thing.
Yeah.
But it's about – right. But the credit card industry, David, learned a long time ago that when you have an asset – that you need a stream of income where it's difficult to really seize an asset, you have to really employ behavioral economics. You have to employ outreach strategies. You have to understand the psychology of the borrower and why they do what they do. So that's where I think servicers need to begin to understand a proactive strategy is a little different. You have to move servicing out of, you know, and I apologize to any servicing operations, you got to move it out of the basement and move it more to the
right.
C-suite. You know, it's a very important operation. You can lose a lot of money if you don't service the right way.
And there's a lot of penalties coming at you if you really don't. 80% of the complaints going to the CFPB are way servicers
yep.
are handling communication. And you brought out the thing about credit unions. That was such a great point. Credit unions do a great job of maintaining that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we've peaked in this broadcast. I'm looking at the clock and we are out of time. But hopefully we've piqued some interest in those services that are in it or those that are getting into it to get a hold of you. And I know you work with some of the largest institutions, and that's your primary
mm-hmm.
focus. But for those that want to get a hold of you, Frank, what's the best way for people to reach you? Email and phone number, website, give it all to us, please.
Sure. The website is www.loanvaluegroup.com. And if you go to that website, you can see all the different incentive programs and all the different things that LVG can do. But basically, our customers at the end of the day, it's about what do I want my consumer to do that is in both their interest and my institution's interest? And we can reach out. But, you know, our number here at the office is 732-741.
Sorry about that. Wrong button. Go ahead.
732-741-7300, or again, the website can give you a lot more color, www.loanvaluegroup.com.
That's the button I was trying to hit to get the drum started. We are out of time, Frank. Thank you so much for taking the time to get a hold of us and reaching out. It's really a joy to have you be a part of the broadcast on a regular basis. I hopefully want to have you back on a regular basis talking about some of the developments in this area in servicing. It's getting a lot of attention from the CFPB folks, and Frank has got a program that is working. It works.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you being with us. Next week, we've got Les Parker, who's going to be talking about continuing our discussion on servicing. Appreciate you being with us each and every week, folks. Have a great week. And those of you that are here in Memphis, can't wait to be addressing you to speaking with you all tomorrow morning. Talk to you soon, everybody. Have a great week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.